Welcome to The Digital Shift. I'm Jenny Weindorp, Director of Development and Engagement here at NHS Providers. This mini-series explores how senior leaders in the health sector can confidently lead their organisations in the shift from analogue to digital. We'll explore topics such as how to harness data, the importance of understanding cyber risks, and what leaders need to do differently to drive progress in the digital age. In each episode, we'll be joined by senior leaders and experts who have led impactful and lasting change in complex organisations. Our host, Chris Fleming, a partner at Public Digital and delivery partner of our Digital Boards and Digital ICS programmes, will draw out practical advice and solutions by digging into the how leaders navigated the challenges of organisation-wide change, and how you can set your teams up for success. In this episode, Chris is joined by Lara Sampson, a digital transformation and product management expert and partner at Public Digital. Lara led the product development of Universal Credit from its inception in 2013 through to 6 million users in 2021. Lara shares how senior leaders can embed good digital practices and, importantly, avoid bad ones. Enjoy the episode.
I'm Chris Fleming. I'm a partner at Public Digital, where I lead our healthcare practice. My previous career has been in various digital delivery leadership roles in the NHS. And over my career, I frequently come up against the challenges of embedding really strong digital practices and ways of working, which is why this topic about the role that leaders play in enabling the right conditions for digital delivery and the difference between good and bad practice is really important. I'm really pleased to be talking about it, especially because when it comes to leading digital change in complex and challenging environments, we could not have asked for anyone better than Lara to share her experience. Lara is a colleague of mine from Public Digital. Welcome, Lara. Hello.
Thanks, Chris. I'm so excited to be here. I'm really looking forward to this.
Okay, so what we're going to do is first, I'm going to fire some quick fire questions at you. Then I'm going to ask you about common misconceptions of digital leadership. And just to warn you, I will be channeling my inner naysayer and saying, well, what about this and what about that? Just so we get down to some of the real practicalities of making this change happen. So by the end of this episode, what we hope is that our listeners will be able to recognize good digital practices and how to establish them and spot bad digital practices and avoid common pitfalls. So does that sound okay?
That sounds not just okay, but I do really encourage you to push me hard, because it's easy to talk about the stuff and principle, and it is actually bringing it to life and practice that gets really tough.
So let's start off with quickfire statements. And the only rule on this, Lara, is one word answers: agree or disagree. Okay, so off we go. Cross-functional teams deliver more value more quickly.
Completely agree.
That's two words, but we'll carry on. It's easy to set up cross-functional teams.
Totally disagree.
Just trolling me now. skipping user needs is okay if the budget is tight.
No, disagree.
Technology should drive the strategy.
Definitely not. Disagree.
Adhering to test and learn principles is the only way to deliver.
I don't actually agree, and we should discuss.
Very good. And finally, doing more means more value.
Definitely not.
Okay. Great. Thank you for that. Let's get on to misconceptions then. So what do you think is the biggest misconception about embedding good digital practice is?
The first is seeing digital as synonymous with technology, or even synonymous with just digital skills. So digital ways of working is really just shorthand for a way of thinking, a way of approaching a problem, and driving at delivery, which has got remarkably little, in fact, to do with technology, does have quite a lot to do with specific digital skills, but has more to do with collaborative design thinking and a real focus on outcomes and user needs. The second is people often think of kind of digital practices as maybe being agile is a word that is often used, and sort of to do with software development and kind of foreign or hard to understand or somehow beyond their professional reach. And that is just not the case. But the label is unhelpful for people, actually.
Yeah, thanks, Lara. The number of times I've heard leaders in not just the NHS, but multiple sectors just say, oh, I'm not really good at digital. There's a sort of othering of it, which, you know, ultimately is can be quite damaging.
Yeah, I studied history of art. I am not an engineer, but I led the product development of the introduction of universal credit, which is transforming working age welfare state for 6 million people. And that involved a lot of digital ways of working. And I found in like my evolution into this professional space to be one where being curious and actually, particularly if in you're in a position of leadership, leading by example of not allowing yourself to be bamboozled. So little story, don't know if it's interesting. As a team in Universal Credit, when we were prioritizing work, I would always say to the software engineers and technologists that my role is to lead on the prioritization, that I wouldn't prioritize anything that I didn't understand. So if someone asked me to invest in some form of Docker containers, so the microservices work better, there is no point in asking me to prioritize that because I don't understand what it is. And I mean, I do now, but I didn't understand what it was and I didn't understand its value. So you can lead by asking people to express what they are advising that you do in a way that you understand. In the same way as if someone was talking to you about an HR problem, you would have no qualms about saying, could you just express to me like the consequences of us not doing that. And to saying that in the world of digital is as important as when you're interacting with any other professional colleague.
That's really helpful. Just to pick up on your comment on prioritization there, Lara, one of the things I see in the NHS, which is pretty endemic, is teams working on everything at once. And that cascades from the national level through to system, through to trusts. What are your thoughts on really practical ways of prioritizing properly?
You know, prioritization is one of the hardest things. And it's so hard because in any public service in particular, the pressures are just enormous and they seem to always be growing. And so I, like any of the reflections I'm going to make are with the utmost empathy for everybody, you know, kind of staring down the barrel of those pressures and the need to do everything all at once. But the joy of really good prioritization, decisive prioritization where you take a whole organization with you, is that you can actually feel the benefit of it quite quickly. So when looking at developing a service, even with extraordinary levels of demand upon you, what typically happens is that you gather that demand and it sort of grows and grows into this big kind of weight on your back, and then everyone starts trying to deliver all of it and all the interconnectedness. And before you know it, and the listeners will recognize this, you're putting actually more effort into managing the scale of what you are trying to do than you are putting into the delivery of the stuff. And even just as an experiment, you can actually change that quite quickly. You know, kind of digital ways of working at Public Digital and elsewhere. You know, we talk a lot about a kind of prioritization, which is now, next, later. And it's not just of delivery, it's actually prioritization of mental effort. So if you're doing something now, you want to keep that really quite a small list, and you just put all your leadership and expertise into making that happen. And that thing will happen disproportionately quickly as a result of that decision. If you can get the organization to accept that the stuff that you've put in later are things you are not going to invest your time in, and I don't just mean you're not going to build it now, I mean you're not going to have endless meetings of it now, you're not going to take precious resources off the front line to discuss it now, you're going to release all of that effort back to where it belongs, and you just concentrate on the thing that you have prioritized. Your pace of delivery will be exponentially quicker, and you can evidence that, I think, really quite quickly. And this totally applies to any kind of service delivery and digital delivery, but in my personal opinion, it applies to any kind of change any organization is trying to do.
That all makes absolute sense to me, Lara. I'm going to put my sort of trust CIO hat on and say, yeah, well, that's all very well, but my world is procuring and rolling out and then stitching together bits of technology predominantly, all of which has quite long lead times.
It's important to recognise that we live in the real world, that some things do have long time scales. So in organisations that need to hire or buy buildings and put hundreds or thousands of people in it, those things take time. And it's very frustrating for leaders to work with quite often digital teams that don't always recognise that reality. But I think that leaders in particular can introduce different behaviours and different ways of working that bring together the concept of what I would call test and learn, but what you could in this example call something like a dynamic operating model. So bring these concepts into their leadership and actually talk about how are we going to manage this tension. So let's say that you are introducing a new service and then you think it will allow patients or potential patients to look after themselves in their home a great deal better than they can at the moment, and it's going to reduce demand on a certain area of your estate or piece of your technology or other service provision. The most important thing is to create the connection between what is actually happening in that near-term delivery and what is being learned and what it means for the longer-term planning. Whereas what I actually see in a lot of organisations is the person with the long-term planning, who normally has a bigger budget, will say, this is not okay that you can't answer my question. Tell me exactly what impact this new service is going to have, because I have to be able to make this commitment, sign that contract, make this choice. That is not a helpful dynamic in the modern world. A helpful dynamic in the modern world is a leadership team that's working together that says, oh, how are we going to be flexible enough to respond to what we're learning in the short to medium term? And that's a leadership challenge. It becomes a procurement challenge. It becomes a planning challenge. But first and foremost, I think that's a leadership challenge, and it's for teams to work through.
You've alluded there, Lara, to this notion of cross-functional working, and listeners, perhaps yourself, will be familiar with the concept in, you know, clinical care of the multidisciplinary team, which is a range of different clinical disciplines coming together to discuss patient cases. You're talking about something slightly different here, so I wondered if you could unpack that for us.
In many very pure digital teams, this idea of kind of multidisciplinary working, actually, I suppose it's not dissimilar to in a clinical world. It's been around for a long time. This idea that you create services based on multi-disciplines working together. So in a digital world, that might be someone working on content and a designer and an engineer all working together. And that's a very well-established concept. When we talk about building multidisciplinary or multifunctional teams, we need to look at the whole organization, not just a digital bit of it. And by the whole organization, I mean having in teams people, empowered people from really important functions like operational delivery, clinicians in the NHS for sure, from security, quite often from policy, as well as from design and so on. You need for all of those functions to be represented in the team, because the way you're getting rapid delivery is by teams making good decisions based on that collective knowledge every single day. And that's what I mean by empowerment. When we talk about multidisciplinary or multifunctional teams, it's very important to say, I'm not talking about a work stream that meets once a week or something like that. We do mean teams of people. And I, you know, this can be difficult because people's time is very precious, but we do mean teams of individuals operating together in a rhythm where they are allowed to make decisions within certain parameters in order to deliver and learn and get the feedback and continue that cycle.
You know, NHS is under absolutely unprecedented kind of pressures. Just channeling my sort of NHS naysayer, how on earth do I protect time for my teams to work in this different way? You know, if I had to convince my board and my CEO to give me those people, what sort of arguments would you be making?
I've tried so many slide decks, persuasion techniques, podcasts. Really, the power of doing the delivery and taking people to it is like nothing beats it. This is not an argument that can be made in the abstract. I've tried it. It doesn't work. The way of making the argument is showing by doing. Ask for the least amount of time you need those people for, but be very, very clear on what you're going to show for it. Like really show something really tangible that matters to people. They just will want more of it. And you will go from, I don't want to support this abstract idea for all my good reasons, to, okay, how could we make this happen with the least impact on me? And then you buy a little bit more time and investment, and you grow a little bit more belief and commitment. And before you know it, you have allies.
I want to pull in another theme here, which is related. So you said in our quickfire questions that skipping user needs is never okay, even if the budget is tight. What's your experience of doing, you know, understanding user needs, you know, on a shoestring if necessary? Have you got any tips for digital leaders on that?
First of all, user needs is a bit of digital jargon. And really, I think that digital jargon is kind of itself a shorthand for what are people trying to do? What outcome do you want for them? And how do you join those two things together? And you see your own pain. You see when, you know, you might see when things get lost, or you might see when people don't turn up to appointments and that's a waste. Like, you can see those things. But what you can't see by understanding users' experience against what they're trying to achieve is the cumulative cost to both them in outcome terms and the organization. So what might feel like a luxury is actually the most important. It's a little bit like building a house without foundations. Like, why would you do that? If you have sufficient skills in user research, design thinking, service mapping, actually getting these foundations in place is some of the lowest cost activity that you will find yourself undertaking. And potentially saving not just operational delivery over time, but really quite significant mistakes that it might stop you from making.
One of the mistakes I often see teams make in the NHS is doing a sort of a classic digital discovery and then presenting it to stakeholders, and the stakeholders say, well, I could have told you that in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it immediately undermines trust. And I think digital teams everywhere could get better at not being sniffy about stakeholder views. You know, there is a lot of lived experience out there, and as long as you're able to validate that in the right way with the appropriate research techniques, then, you know, you can accelerate quite far in understanding, you know, user needs. And that's a way of doing it for cheaper as well.
Definitely. And some of this, I think, can be slightly alleviated by saying to digital teams or digital suppliers or whoever you're talking to, like, I understand that what I am trying to do here is understand the user's needs against the outcomes. I don't need to be convinced of it, but I need to see it happen in practice. And I want you to use this lived experience of my organization to help you do that. There's a lot to be said about growing and a sufficient understanding of the profession to be able to ask it to help you in intelligent ways, and therefore everyone gets somewhere quicker, faster.
What do you think design thinking brings to the NHS, and how might a trust get started with designers?
I think the good news is this is not talking about armies of people. I don't think it is practically a very difficult thing to introduce to your organisation. And the reason I say that is because people who bring a service design mentality to problems are people who are very used to joining things together and synthesizing quite complex landscapes and presenting those back in a way that allows people to make choices. You could just try it around your top table. So someone with design thinking would just bring a completely different lens on almost every single discussion you have. So this doesn't all have to be an end user service thinking. You might be that, like, we've got a really major problem with recruitment or retention, and having someone with design thinking lens, they will immediately see that problem from the user. So that might be the person you're trying to recruit or retain, and they will be curious as to what their experience is like that gets them to make certain decision. So I think the value of it is really very transparent, very, very quickly.
So Lara, I want to come on to technology because, you know, and I know that one of the occupational hazards of being a digital leader in the NHS is that your clinical leaders will go to a conference and they'll see an AI gizmo that is producing unbelievable results in looking at x-rays or some other imagery or whatever it might be. And so then they're then asking, well, why are we using this tool? Why are we using AI, etc.? You were unequivocal that technology should not drive the strategy. What are your practical tips for dealing with requests for widgets into digital leaders?
Partly my emphatic response to your quickfire is because it's just a product of having seen the same mistake play out over and over and over again, where people talk about a bit of technology, they spend all their effort buying a bit of technology, the technology turns off, it's just like, and it never does what they hoped it would do ever. And that is because there hasn't been the conditions. It's not the fault of the technology. Technology is awesome, but it's because the conditions haven't been there for it to be successful. So if you have a way of saying, we know how to test things to see what happens, see if our hypothesis was right, or tweak it if we're not right, or back out if we were wrong. And then you can test multiple technologies because you have a repeatable process for finding out whether your ideas are good ideas or bad ideas before you inflict it on everyone. Mature organizations are able to change things all the time without breaking it. And they're able to change and change and change. A lot of organizations did this successfully in COVID. So it's not that it's not achievable, but organizations without that capability find change exhausting, are constantly trying to strive for the new stability so they can catch their breath, because every bit of change produces something painful or unexpected. Have a clear strategy of your direction of travel, and then have a strategy which is technology can help us test certain hypotheses, and we will know how we're going to reassure ourselves of those tests or examine those tests and continuously improve or back out.
I know we're running out of time, but just to wrap up, what we're going to do now is return to the quickfire questions. And this time I'm going to be generous and allow a whole sentence to respond to them.
Wow.
So cross-functional teams deliver more value more quickly.
They definitely do. They take investment. It pays off. Make sure you show the payoff quickly to get belief.
It's easy to set up cross-functional teams.
It is not easy to set up cross-functional teams. It takes a lot of investment. I use the word curation a lot. You need to curate them. You need to care for them. You need to love them. Don't underestimate that.
Skipping user needs is okay if budget is tight.
It will just make the demands on your budget 10 times bigger. It is a relatively straightforward and pretty low-cost activity in the grand scheme of what you're trying to achieve. Worth its weight in gold.
Technology should drive the strategy.
I hope we've made it clear that user needs and outcomes should drive the strategy. Having a way of testing your hypotheses should drive the strategy. And by all means, welcome technology into that in its appropriate place. But it is part of a jigsaw. And don't ever treat it as a single jigsaw of its own. Always understand the connections.
Test and learn principles is the only way to deliver.
This is like a trick question. It's really important that this is horses for courses. There is no dogma in this. You know, the word agile has got heavily associated with software in a quite dogmatic way. The stupid fight between agile and waterfall drives me crazy. Yeah, don't build a motorway with test and learn. Probably don't roll out your Wi-Fi with test and learn, but definitely use a test and learn mentality when introducing services, improving services, and when you're thinking about the role of technology in your organisation.
Finally, doing more means more value.
Everyone knows how much time and energy spent in any large organisation on doing stuff is not necessarily valuable. So doing more does not just not mean more value. Doing more quite often means burying the value so that you can't even see it where it's happening. Focusing on a few things, making them happen quickly. Pace over volume. And so pace doesn't work. Asking your whole organization to go quicker at everything doesn't work. It's not possible. But prioritizing and then say, and let's do it quickly, that does work. So I think injecting pace and momentum. So a lot of organizations start stuff and then they squander the momentum. So operating at pace, generating momentum, and then caring about that momentum and using it to go faster and not squandering it is a really important role for leadership to wrap around all of this.
Well, I'm afraid our momentum on this podcast is running out, so I'm going to have to bring it to a close, but maybe we can return to that in more detail in a future podcast. Thank you very much, Lara, for all of your expertise and time on good and bad practices in digital delivery, and thank you for listening.
Thank you, Chris.
That's it for this episode of The Digital Shift. You can find relevant and related content in the show notes if you'd like to delve deeper into some of the things mentioned in this episode. And if you'd like to find out more about how our digital support offers can help you in your role, head to NHS Providers website. Thanks for listening.